Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello, Whitwit.
Hello, and Mr. Josh Brown.
Hello, pals.
Hello, chaps. Now, it seems like an absolute age ago since I played Miles Morales, because time's a flat circle this year anyway. But I was lucky enough to play, obviously, Spider-Man alongside reviewing the PlayStation 5. And we've barely talked about the story since then, because we kind of thought we would wait until now when we've all finished it and we dive in for a big old spoiler cast. So both of you guys obviously have finished the story. Obviously, big old spoilers for the entirety of Miles Morales. We're going to dive into everything relating to that game. Ewan, what were your general thoughts right now on this game?
Yeah, I mean, I overall did not think it was as strong a product as Marvel's Spider-Man. But that being said, you know, that's like the top tier superhero heroic-y gaminess for me. So anything that's going to approach that level is already pretty great. Of course, Miles Morales does. And narratively, I loved what they did with him and his family. I thought this was much more of a family-driven game. And there was it was interesting as well, because even though I found myself missing the world-building aspects of the last Spider-Man, where, you know, you basically were given all the landmarks to explore Insomniac's version of New York and what made that so unique, I did think Miles Morales had a great sense of community, and I loved all the Spider-Man app. I loved interacting with all the citizens of Harlem. I loved doing interactions in the world that weren't just go and randomly stop this drug deal, because I enjoyed helping someone rescue their cat who had got in the sewer. I enjoyed de-icing a crane. Like, that to me is what Spider-Man is all about. He's that local hero who kind of helps the little guy, and to me that this actually embodied that more than the previous game, I kind of thought. But yeah, overall I thought that was my highlight of the game. For me, was kind of the Spider-Man app and chatting with Genki and the familial stuff as well, including Uncle Aaron.
Because I was gonna, we'll get back to Uncle Aaron. I was gonna ask, because when I was playing through it, I messaged, it was one of you guys, I think you, and I think it was you, just saying, like, because I don't know anything about Miles Morales. My entry point for him was Into the Spider-Verse, which is still my favorite anything ever. It's just the best thing on this earth, and I recommend people go watch that. But coming out of Miles Morales and then playing the game, I was just, that whole thing about him being the sort of communal Spider-Man, like, and multiple people know who he is, especially by the end of the story. That feels like it would be a massive plot point in the Peter Parker style side of things, but I really like that like a whole group of people, he is powered by his community, like he is this, you know, like champion of the people in a more obvious way, like people know who he is, his mom does, and like whatever. I just, that's the, I think I messaged you, Ewan, because I was like, oh, is this standard for Miles Morales fiction? Because I thought that was really, really cool.
No, it definitely is. Like, to me, the most obvious, you know, reference point people will probably have for how Miles was in the original Ultimate comics is probably the way Peter Parker has been depicted in the MCU. You know, he's very much, most of Miles in his original appearances is like inextricably linked to obviously Peter's legacy, but then also to the Avengers. So he kind of becomes, he gets the Spider-Man identity thrust upon him by S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Avengers, and he kind of has to work his feelings through there. So even though obviously, you know, there is that sense of community, it's not as pronounced as it was, you know, in this game, whereas in the original comics it was all about, oh, he's kind of helping out the Avengers, now he's getting involved in a giant civil war and he's helping Captain America and stuff. So it is, it's still, you know, but that's not to say that it hasn't obviously taken on the different aspects of Miles' more recent comics since he made the leap from the Ultimate Universe into Earth 616 with Secret Wars. And then you've obviously had Brian Bendis come back to continue to do that, where he's integrated Miles into the main Marvel continuity, but then also the Saladin Ahmed Miles Morales series as well, which this series takes a bunch of cues from.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's just like the feeling of him, like, because it differentiates him so much from Peter. I feel like the reason I love Peter Parker a lot, or a lot of the, like, I don't know, main, I might be totally wrong for this in terms of the way the character's gone over the years, but my version, my take on Spider-Man is that he is kind of like this lonely dude who's doing what he can, but he's like forever alone. He can never sort of, you know, make anything work in the grand scheme of things. And whereas Miles was like, is comfortable with his community and the people that are around him, and he stands for that local community. And like I said, he's respected for him as Miles Morales, as well as what he does as Spider-Man. And I like both those things. Mr. Josh Brown, you've been putting up with me and you and talking this whole time. What's your thoughts?
Good discourse, man. It's a genuine pleasure to be part of such lovely flowing discourse about this game. You know what I mean? It's a great game. It's a great character.
This cheeky chappy.
It's good content, bro. You know what I mean? Like, Spider-Man Miles Morales, I really enjoyed, and it didn't quite live up to the potential I thought it had in the opening. I remember playing the first hour, the night I got it, the first hour and a half, where you do like the first big set piece with Peter Parker, and you have like that Christmas Day scene, and I thought this is as good as superhero fiction in video games gets. This is just absolutely on point. They're making time for the smaller scenes. They've got the spectacle absolutely nailed on. I thought it was going to be essentially like a Spider-Man 2 on that level. I don't think it quite hits that, but like Ewan said, that's such a high bar. For me, it sits firmly between that original game and the DLC. I think it is way better in terms of narrative resonance and, you know, gameplay spectacle than that, but it doesn't quite hit the creative peaks of the 2018 game. But for me, it all comes down to Miles's characterization and the way he's presented in this game. I loved spending time with him and his immediate circle and getting into these relationships that we have seen quite a lot. You know, like the relationship with Uncle Aaron, obviously well trodden in Spider-Verse now. If you've read the original Ultimate comics like I have, I haven't read much of the recent stuff, but I'm, you know, quite familiar with his origin story. So all of that was familiar, but I feel like they did with Peter, they've put enough of a distinctive Insomniac take on it to make it unique to this world. And I like that he's acting now as a proper counterpoint, you know, to Peter. In this version, in the first game, Peter Parker's this older version of the character, you know what I mean? He's been through some stuff. He's not quite this proper old veteran. He's somewhere in the middle, but it's certainly a more advanced take than the perpetually stuck in high school loner mentality that the comics love throwing him back into after every few years stint outside of it. And I like that with this game in particular, with this story in particular, you see Miles like really become a hero, and they nail that arc. I know, Scott, you were a bit worried that they might skip over a lot of that kind of becoming Spider-Man development, but I feel like there's enough of it here combined with enough confidence, like you said, in knowing who he is or knowing who he wants to be, in watching that play out and watching the different identities of Miles as the person and Miles as a hero kind of just joining together by the end to make this version of Spider-Man distinct and not an imitation kind of someone else. And for that, I can't praise it more. Like, when it resonated with me, this game resonated with me. There are some faults that I won't get to now, but overall, generally, like, it's, again, it's another promising step forward. I just can't wait to see what Insomniac does next with like a proper next gen Spider-Man or whatever.
So we talk about like, what, yeah, we'll get on to what I think, because one of the things that I want to address in terms of like more of a negative is that for me, by the time we got to the very end of it, like I really think the back third just starts to rush a little in a way that I didn't really like. I thought it just felt like it had a really weird pace to it, where I felt like it was playing a really careful hand beforehand. And I think that this is a really big point, because for me, there's a lot of it that feels like it almost started as a DLC or a small project overall, and it sort of was stretched out into this bigger release so they could get in on the launch window of the consoles, or maybe Sony wanted it to be this like full project, in the way that, you know, it's not like Sony haven't been boisterous with their money, getting in touch with Square Enix and going, hey, can you do us a Spider-Man DLC on the side? And I kind of wonder if that's what they did with this as well, because in Miles Morales, as much as I like love the game overall, I think it's an incredibly, there's a level of quality throughout the production and everything else, and the performances that are great. Once I started actually 100%ing it and collecting all the time capsules and exploring everything, I was like, oh, there's so much story here that I wish was in the cutscenes. I wish you fleshed out Miles and Finn a hell of a lot more than you did, because I don't have any sort of reference point for Finn overall. I guess that for you guys, you probably knew that she was going to be the Tinkerer because of her name. maybe anyway.
Well, that and also the fact she literally, her introduction, she's tinkering with the light switch and like outside. It's fine. You know, I think the fact that I would have been annoyed if they teased out the mystery longer because they made it so obvious from the start that this is where it was going.
I wouldn't have got it.
I kind of thought it did. But like, again, it was another one of those things where Miles just seems to get a raw deal in terms of like his close friends and family just turning out to be like people he didn't realize they were. Although that being said, I thought what they did with the Tinkerer was really interesting and, you know, made that character more than just an evil genius. It was kind of what they were, you know, in the comics. So I was glad that they made that change. And I enjoyed the friendship that those two characters had as well. I thought it was very well handled. And I enjoyed the kind of, you know, the nuance it provided. You know, Miles is there realizing that, okay, well, maybe, you know, the underground, you know, they're trying to disrupt Roxxon. And I thought it did a great job of just kind of basically getting into those characters' mindsets. They weren't just people to beat up, you know, they had their own motivations. And while, yes, they do kind of, you know, stereotype a bunch of the different underground members as, you know, just kind of wanting to get fame and fortune and, you know, be the guys that lived in the Kingpin's Tower and, you know, they're taking over New York and stuff. There are other compelling motivations at play there, which I really enjoyed. And I do think that's where the story shines the most is Miles in that kind of close inner circle, you know, with Finn, with Rio. Rio stole the show for me in many places here. She was such a great mum. There's a moment towards the end of the story, and I think it's when you're doing the treasure hunt, which just broke me completely. But when you're going through there and she's explaining some of the messages that you get from Jefferson, there's also a moment where she just calls you and Miles is like, oh, is there anything wrong? And she's like, no, just calling in to check on you. And I was like, oh, that's so nice. And obviously, you know, I'm here for Genki as well. Genki is great in this game. And I love that whole dynamic they have going on there. And I thought they did Uncle Aaron really well too. I was very worried at one point that they were going to go full evil with Aaron, which Josh will know kind of happens in the Ultimate Comics as well, where there's kind of that whole thing where Aaron tries to blackmail Miles into using his spider powers for evil, whereas with here, he's just looking out for his nephew. So you have what I would consider to be that more benevolent version of the version we see in Into the Spider-Verse, where if he had gotten the chance to make amends for his mistakes working with the Kingpin instead of just getting shot, that's kind of where you could have seen him go down. And I thought it was just wonderful. They were all just thoroughly fleshed out and well developed. And again, it's a testament to Insomniac's strong character work with
That's the stuff that I thought was a little bit too rushed for me. Like, because one of the biggest reasons I love the 2018 game is that whole relationship between Peter Parker and Otto. I thought that even though going in, you could argue that you knew exactly where that was gonna go. And I like that even in that game they tease it with him in the suit at the very beginning. But I thought that was a testament to the writing that you want to save him from himself. You almost think like, oh, they're gonna go in a different direction so that when he gives in to becoming Doc Ock, it is still a big shocking human moment. Whereas I didn't get that in this. I just thought it felt too rushed. And I kind of thought that falling back on Finn's tech, where her tech can do everything, it's just you can sprint up a building and jump through the clouds and all this crazy stuff. I burst out laughing when she jumped through the clouds. I just thought that was insane for me. But because it just reminded me of like an Injustice fatality.
Watching just this beloved character die. absurd.
It was just the fact that, like, because she beats you a few times in cutscenes where I was like, okay, man, she's like super furious and she like beats Miles down. And I was like, yeah, I guess your rage could make you that powerful. But then it kind of just gets hung on the tech side of it, which I kind of wanted to be explored a bit more. And then, like I said, when you delve into the time capsules and things like that, you find out there's way more reason for her to be annoyed. There's way more history there where they were practically brother and sister that I feel didn't really come across in that dinner scene at the beginning of the story. So for those things, just felt kind of disparate to me. And then, like I said, you top it off with like the sprinting up the building stuff, right? I was disconnected at that point where I was like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I have no reference point to this. I'm just kind of watching these scenes unfold. But we can like roll that together. I mean, Josh, what's your thoughts on that stuff? And also you can roll Roxxon in, because I know you weren't a fan of the old Troy Baker Roxxon.
You didn't like Simon Krieger? Sorry.
I'll get to him in a bit. I'll just say my piece on Finn, because Roxxon, anyway, no, that's not the point. I want to talk about something good. With the Finn stuff, I thought was really well done. I have a little bit of an issue towards the end where I thought they're kind of, the wedge between Finn and Miles felt a little bit contrived to me. It felt kind of like, one of those rom-com sort of plot contrivances where it should be a sort of relatively easy solution and none of the characters are kind of taking it. I thought the rage that Finn had for Miles was a little bit overblown. The fact that he couldn't get in.
Super quickly jump on that. Just super, super quickly. I don't know if I missed a bit of dialogue, but when she first finds out who he is, she's then annoyed that he didn't tell her who he was. But I was like, you're like a terrorist leader. Like, you're just as much at fault here. Like, but I was kind of waiting for Miles to say something, but he just kind of takes it as if he's in the wrong
that's more implied of like, why didn't you tell me before I became the Tinkerer?
Right. Okay. I thought they could have done that a hell of a lot better. Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
With stuff like that, I thought that was kind of, I think that works as a human moment anyway. Like that someone could be annoyed, even if it is quite hypocritical for them. Like, I think that still works as a character flaw or a character trait. It was just kind of like the to get to that moment when she's running up and she's sacrificing herself. Part of me kind of thought that the writers might have had that first and sort of tried to work backwards and figure out how they got to that point. That was the bit that felt muddled. But I always enjoyed the relationship between the two and like the interactions between the two, both in the costume and outside of the costume. And I thought that they did a good job of nailing the fact that they had this history. You know, like she's right there at the dinner scene, she's being shady when they're on the rooftop, that she's dropping all these hints. And I feel like if they sort of directly brought in the collectible aspect where you get Miles, you know, seeing these artifacts, talking about these past stories, I feel if they pushed that too much in the main narrative, it would bring the pacing down even more. Because for me, when they go to the museum towards the end, like it's quite a nice scene. It's great to establish the context, but even that for me, I was kind of like, this is taken away. This is jarring. This is oddly placed. So that's why I don't really feel like they needed to cram all that extra stuff in, because they do enough in the story itself for me. And that other stuff, it gives you an incentive to go out and collect those collectibles. It's not like they're sort of ignored. I feel like they push that on you enough so you can have this wider context should you need it. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I just thought when it came to the character relationships, I have problems with all of their arcs, but ultimately they all felt real and I could go with the through line, even if there were a few wobbly moments, perhaps down to the production of the entire piece or how short the game itself was. Ultimately, I thought I could see enough of what they were trying to do and they nailed enough of what they did do that I didn't mind the inconsistencies in it. It could be better, but I still think it's pretty damn good.
But Simon Krieger, though.
Oh, Simon Krieger could absolutely eat my...
I thought he was fun because you. I remember you saying that you weren't a fan of him, but I was like, they got Troy Baker to just be like full.
I thought he was class.
Like smarmy Baker,
he's
like
so happy.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas that's all I wanted from that guy, just be like faceless corporate 101, and he's kind of having fun with it. There's a few little sort of like jibes and jokes in there that totally worked for me. But I get, well, Josh, your problem was that stuff. You acknowledged that stuff too, but it just annoyed you, and he was just vacuous.
Yeah. I have like three problems with this entire sort of story. It's like, I'm so sick of the idea of this big tech corporation and this same kind of caricature being in these stories over and over again. I just feel like I've seen that character played out in Spider-Man stories and superhero stories in regular fiction as well, that I'm kind of over it. And Krieger, it's not like he needs to be like this kind of suave, interesting, three-dimensional character, but I felt like he needed something else.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
They played him so straight to the point where I was expecting there to be something more. I was like, there has to be something more to this. But there just wasn't. And he kind of fills a role well, but it's a role that I am personally just kind of sick of seeing in these stories. And there's also Troy Baker's performance. And it pains me to say, because I love Troy Baker for the most part. He's given some of my all-time favorite video game performances. But it feels like he's phoning this one in. It feels to me like the dude's just there. And there are times when he has fun, but for the 90% of it, I was just like, you're Troy Baker doing the Troy Baker voice. It was the part of the game that I genuinely, the only part that I think is actively not good. I didn't find any at all redeeming qualities in that side of the game for whatever reason.
I was gonna say, like, I totally agree with some of the Roxxon stuff though. Overall, like, I do think as a threat they are quite not that fleshed out enough for me. Like, in the comics, there's so much depth to Roxxon, specifically to do with cloning, where I thought, you know, I got really excited when they were first announced, because like, oh my God, are they going to maybe introduce Spider-Woman here from the Ultimate Universe? Maybe introduce some cloning here? Maybe do a bit of Ben Reilly-ing? Maybe? I don't know. Because there's always the chance to make the Clone Saga something interesting. Insomniac I can do whatever they want in that department. But yeah, I agree. I kind of thought there was going to be more to Krieger, because he seemed like a man that was being rushed. Like, he had someone over his head that was pushing in to like really finish a deadline. And it did feel, even though, you know, there were some really pivotal stakes going on right now, it was weird to me in the sense that it was all wrapped up so much, and that it was also local to Krieger in New York, if that kind of makes sense in a weird way. And I do, you know, I think there were other bits that were kind of rushed as well, like with Rhino. Is Rhino dead? Is he alive? Who knows? They never really, they don't dwell on it long enough, because I assume they don't want the Peggy 18 rating. So I don't know if Rhino is dead or not.
That's a funny moment, Ewan, because I remember when that was playing out, and for a second I was like, oh, holy hell, they're going to do something big here. If they kill like Rhino, like, that's such a ballsy move. Mm-hmm. But then obviously they don't show you the body or anything like that, and it's implied. I'm like, oh, okay, this is you kind of... I felt like it was a little half-step moment where you could have done something really interesting and cool, but because of perhaps the reality of making video games or playing with his license, it's like you couldn't quite commit to it in a way that I felt that the 2018 version probably would have committed to it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That was the thing I was going to say, was like, because I started that whole point before about like the final third feeling quite rushed and my sort of issues that I have with the way the story's told. Now some of it is, you know, relegated to side things, and it could have reinforced the main narrative more if it was in cutscenes and things like that. At the very end, because we should get on to like where we think it's going to go from here, when they do their post, I think it's the post credits, it's definitely one of the final scenes, and you go back, you see the you know, Norman Osborn from Harry's perspective, and you get back to ostensibly where we were at the end of 2018. That had a knock-on effect for me of just going like, okay, this was fundamentally essentially a side story. We're just back to where we were in the main canon or the main through line, and we're going to pick up Miles' stuff in Spider-Man 2. And like that, it kind of sucks in a way, because I feel like Miles deserves better than this thing that you could totally miss Miles Morales, pick up Spider-Man 2 and just carry on. Like, I don't feel like there's anything in Miles Morales that's going to fundamentally contribute to that main story.
I mean, we don't know. Miles. Like, that might be a bit premature, in all fairness, because we don't know how. We don't know how pivotal Miles will be in the next story. And I thought this was a clever way of making sure that you give the character his full arc, and that by the time you get to the full sequel, you're not going to do a half-assed origin story where you show Miles, you know, in the suit and stuff. And I feel as though
I want him to be trained. I want Peter to grapple with what's it like training another one of him for the first time.
I don't know if I really needed to see that, because Miles has never really needed training. I mean, he has needed training from other people, but it's never usually come from Peter, I thought, which again, maybe that's a part of the thing that makes this version of Insomniac's Marvel Universe so unique or whatever. They had the opportunity to do that. But I do think they've taken the right approach here in terms of making it a standalone. And then by the time we get to the full sequel, you can have Peter and Miles, two characters you're well and truly familiar with, kind of interacting. And, you know, establish that relationship that they have going on right now, that partnership, and pushing it against each other. Because I do think there's going to be a lot of, you know, if we're going to get into speculative territory, I do think there's going to be a lot of conflict in the sequel between the two. I do think that potentially Peter will get the Venom symbiote suit, and it'll be down to Miles to try and, you know, maybe Peter is getting more dark and Miles is like, no, Peter, what are you doing? And then his Venom blast might have a disruptive effect on the symbiote or something, or maybe, I don't know, it's kind of going down that angle. I'm getting wild off here, but yeah.
That's pretty good. Josh, what's your thoughts here?
Yeah, I thought something very similar. First, I want to go back to what you said, though, Scott, about like the kind of like tease, because I thought something similar. I think, like Ewan said, this game's all about like setting up Miles and going through like that character arc rather than lore implications. You know, I feel like we got that through Simon Krieger being somehow just neatly tied up at the very end and sent off to jail because he's the bad guy and he's got to go to jail. I'm sure Finn will come
Troy
up.
Baker's got another gig, mate.
he's busy, right? He's a busy dude. I'm sure Finn will come up, but I do feel like this is very much, while it might not have narrative implications of the next game, it's all about like getting Miles to where he needs to be, so we can appreciate him much more in the next game. I thought more or less the exact same thing, RE, the Venom suit that Ewan did, though, because I was wondering, even at the end of the last game, even though they've obviously changed a lot with the origin of this and who's presumably going to be Venom, I was thinking about how they could fundamentally change Peter Parker's arc in that story and how they can make it interesting for him to get the Venom suit. Because especially in video games, we have seen the Venom or a symbiote story play out over and over again. It's like the most popular
video game. Will you choose Mary Jane or Black Cat?
Yeah, it's the most popular video game Spider-Man story. And I think that if you put Miles into that and you have the conflict arising between them because Peter's got this suit, or he gets the suit, I think that's a really novel way to make it feel fresh again. And like I said, for Insomniac to put their own spin on it.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. I mean, they've done such a good job so far with taking almost like the smallest amount of expected beats and really fleshing them out. Like I said, the thing that I loved so much about 2018's one is how that they revitalized the idea of just Peter and Ock hanging out, or sorry, an Otto hanging out, and then you go down that expected route, but you do it so well that it still lands and it still matters and all that kind of thing. We should mention Kurt Connors, because he pops up in this end scene. Do you guys think that's more of a cameo because this is a side thing, or do you think that's literally just we're gonna go full on Lizard
I think it's definitely like they established in this universe that the Lizard was one of the first villains Spider-Man fought. I think, you know, in the backpacks from the first game, they show a Lizard vial where Peter had already encountered Dr. Connors. So I'm assuming here that maybe Norman's taking him out of prison and is like, hey, Kurt, you can work for me and you'll be fine and I'll look after you and keep you around and stuff. And I wonder if the conflict that they're going to build there between Norman and Kurt is that Norman's putting him under too much pressure to try and, you know, save his son. Then maybe that's what provokes Kurt to relapse into the Lizard potentially. And I'm curious to see whether or not they will do Green Goblin, because I think they have to. You can't have Norman Osborn and not do it. But equally at this point in time, I have no idea how they're going to do it. Another tease that I did point out when I was talking to you guys was that there were some Easter eggs pointing towards Spider Slayers. There was, I think it was Alastair Smythe or Spencer Smythe. There was a box labeled there. I would love to see the Spider. There are two Spider-Men now. They need the Spider Slayers because they're getting the big thing here. And again, it's, you know, there's all sorts of different angles they can go with there. But I definitely think the Lizard will have a bigger role than just kind of feel like here.
Yeah, because you've established Miles and we've got Peter. Like, I went back and played the 2018 game and I missed the Venom powers immediately. I miss all the modifiers that you have as Miles. Mm-hmm. But I kind of wonder, I mean, that's a good way gameplay-wise to differentiate them. But I kind of wonder story-wise, like obviously in the Miles game, Spidey just goes on holiday for like a week and then that's your excuse to just focus on one Spider-Man. But I wonder what they'll do in Spider-Man 2 to try and either split them up or we be jumping between them. Is it like, there's obviously rumors that it's potentially going to be co-op and stuff like that. Like, do you guys think that they'll try and find some plot contrivance to make you focus on one at a time, or we will be flicking between both?
I mean, all you've got to do is, for me, and this might be just something outrageous that I've thought up right now, but you have some kind of system early on where you do flick between the both of them, you know what I mean? Or maybe you're playing as Peter for a lot, but Miles is definitely there and involved in missions. And then further on down the line, Peter gets the suit, kind of goes off the rails, becomes way more venomy than he ever was in the comics or the original kind of like symbiote arc. Could potentially even become not quite the main Venom of this universe, but he could take on that kind of boss kind of, you know, nature. He could be potentially the end boss where then you play as Miles trying to like snap him out of it, kind of getting into that potential situation where you play as Miles for a good chunk where you need to rescue Peter or whatever from himself. And then you get like some kind of emotional pull from that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's something just stupid that I've brought off the top of my head.
That's interesting.
Something like that. Or like, because they now have Lizard on the table in a more obvious way and they have Green Goblin, it's like you would need two villains of a certain caliber for a Spider-Man each to try and tackle. Like that whole bit at the end of the 2018 game where you're going after all the villains in succession, I assume that they would branch that stuff out more and do that stuff more justice. I guess as well, we've got Venom as well. Do you guys think that they'll, because I'm sure Brian Intihar initially said that they were thinking of this as a trilogy, that it would be something that would continue to go on in multiple installments and they're not going to, you know, do all the big villains in the next one. So I kind of wonder if the end of the next game, either they'll keep Venom until part three, or I think it'll be, you know, they'll end on some sort of tease for someone as big as the Lizard or Goblin or something like that.
Yeah, I think Venom's probably guaranteed for the next game. I wouldn't think they'd leave him for the third one. I think if they were going to leave anyone, maybe they'll leave Norman to get the Green Goblin suit. Maybe something terrible happens to Harry and he blames it on Peter. I don't know. Right. It's probably going way off into speculative territory there. I don't know what you're going to say, Josh.
That's exactly my sort of prediction there, Ewan. You've got it in one. I think next game will be about Venom because we've had two big teasers now and I don't think you then delay that gratification for another game. But I do think, obviously, Harry's going to be heavily involved. We know that Norman has so much invested in keeping this kid alive. And if something terrible does happen to Harry, which is likely based on everything, I think that will be the kickstart to go into the third game with this intense rivalry between Norman Osborn, now as the Green Goblin, and Peter and Miles as the two Spider-Men. You know what I mean? You get that game to properly establish the stakes, and then you go all in Spidey versus Goblin on third game. That's how I would...
That's
how I hope it goes, rather than overstuff the second game with too many villains.
Yeah. You don't want another Spider-Man 3 scenario. Although, Josh Brown, you would want another Spider-Man 3 scenario.
If you do get the symbiote suit, you don't get to do the Spidey 3 dance, what's the point? I'm not playing the game.
You can kind of almost do that. You do the double little finger gun thing. Just playing some moves. I was going to say, in regards to speculative territory, you mentioned the whole thing of like Peter moving into May's place in Queens, that might be hinting at something for the next game.
Yeah, unless I've misread the phone call that Miles and Peter have at the end of the game, one of the many phone calls they have, I swear they do mention something like Peter is in May's old place and is talking about changing the lime green kitchen sink or something like that. So I'm assuming he might have moved in there because obviously he was having rent troubles in the previous game. And where was he moving it? Was he moving into... He was getting his own place at the end of 2018, wasn't he? I can't remember now.
Yeah, because they do the whole scene on the roof thing.
But he was in May's apartment when they were talking, or May's place when, that, in at the end of this game. So I don't know. My main speculative point here is that I do think that instead of it just being Manhattan, I do think in the next game we'll see Queens. I do think that, you know, maybe if we're going to talk about and delve into the friendship between Harry, MJ and Peter, maybe that makes Queens more of a pivotal location, you know, in terms of going back and walking through their childhood at, you know, kind of at Midtown High and going through Queens as a locale. I do think the open world needs more of a revamp in the next game.
I was gonna say,
because even though the winter setting was lovely, it needs that added environmental storytelling thrust for me. Without that added impetus of go check out these landmarks, they just kind of blend into the background, which maybe is a testament to, you know, the fact that it is so seamlessly integrated. But equally, I do want to explore more of this next time. And to that effect, maybe we could get some more actual Marvel cameos this time, rather than being like, oh, there's Doctor Strange's place. He never comes out or something like that. I want to see Daredevil. I want to see Luke Cage. I want to just see them out and about. I don't mean it to be like an actual team up event where they all get involved and they distract from the game, almost in a way that was the case in Web of Shadows, I think it was. But I would like to race Human Torch around New York. I would like to meet with like Daredevil and stuff like that. Like, it's in the Marvel Universe. Start embracing it.
The PS1 Spider-Man game, the one that was narrated by Stan Lee, had cameos left, right, and center, and Daredevil dropping in. Give me more of that. I think we should end on just very quick thoughts on the new face. It's not as new anymore, but I think now that we've experienced the new face for many, many hours, I've done a complete 180 on it, completely fine with it. Although I don't think that it animates as well as the old face. I am referring to Peter Parker's new face. But in that first scene that you see the two of them sitting down when he makes Miles do the Spidey Oath with the old rock hand, I didn't think his face was moving very much. And I was like, I reckon the original, you know, Mr. Cheekbones would have got that working, but it was, we had to have the new one. What do you guys think of the new face?
Go, Josh.
The boss is like, do you want to go first? I agree and disagree with you, Scott. I don't know how we keep doing this. We have this unique ability.
We do it all day, every day, mate. It's fine.
Come to the same conclusion, yet in radically different ways. Like, I've come round to the new face now. It is the new face. But what made me convinced is I thought the level of facial animation was, like, immense. I thought it was so good, even in that opening scene. The little twitches, the little nuances, that's what won me round. I thought this is the next-gen Peter Parker. And even on Miles as well, obviously. But I thought, like, the hair, the face, the little movements, it made me want to get Spider-Man remastered, to be honest. Like, how good I thought it was.
It was same with me. I don't know if it's like a Stockholm situation now where the new Peter has got me at gunpoint and it's like my face. But, you know, it is everything Insomniac said it would be in terms of, you know, it does animate better. And I think it does look a little... My main issue as ever with this Peter Parker design is that he's a terrible dresser. He's just got the worst fashion.
You had this back
whole,
in 2018.
What is this shirt over shirt combo and the really baggy jeans? Like, come on, Peter, you're 24. No 24-year-old dresses like that in 2020. I'm sorry. This is the most immersion-breaking thing for me is that he's not a snappy dresser at all. That said, Miles is meant to be the snappier dresser, so who knows? But again, I think the face is it's fine. I still think it's a pointless change, if I'm being honest, because I don't really care about that level of, you know, specificity with the animations. But equally, it did grow on me, and he didn't look like a child when he was actually in the costume and they're sitting on the rooftop in the Spidey suit, which was kind of the main thing for me there. He does look fine. So, and it did make me want to try and get the remastered game, even though I've played Spider-Man PS4 like a bajillion different times.
I think, actually, Josh, were you going to say something else before there about Le Face?
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, the amount of time that MJ has spent with Peter now, the fact that she hasn't given him a better fashion sense is criminal. Like, she's letting him down. Like, that should have been the clincher between the two. That should have been why they sort of fell out, because he's got no excuse, man. Like you said, he's too old to be dressing like his mom still dresses him, is all I'm saying.
Of all the wish list features for Spider-Man 2, new wardrobe is now number one.
Yep.
So we'll have to see what happens. But let us know what you think down in the comments below. This is the What Culture Gaming podcast, the one episode a week that goes out on the YouTube channel. Everything else is over on audio feeds, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. Come find us, subscribe, tell your friends and all that type of stuff. But for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Goodbye, Spider-Man.
And Mr. Josh Brown.
Goodbye. Get me more pictures of Spider-Man.
I will catch you next time.
Bye.
Sleep.
Three nerds in isolation.
Sleep.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.